Welcome in, everybody. Farzetta and Trey in the morning. Mark Farzetta, Trey Thomas, Bob Cooney, Sam Wilson producing the program. Jamie Lynch, sick again today. Poor fella. Him and Joel. I wonder if he was hanging out with Joel Embiid.
Oh, I got the diarrhea. I can't help myself. I have a headache.
Sam Wilson's producing the program today. Andrew Salchunas on the updates per use. I couldn't wait to just talk about Joel Embiid. And listening, and Bob, I heard you in the five.
It's a sin.
It is a sin that Jamie's not in today on a day that Joel Embiid used the word diarrhea. It is just, it's not right. The world is not a perfect place.
He would have the giggles all day long.
He would, over under on the amount of times Jamie would play the drop of Joel Embiid saying he has diarrhea. Set the line for us.
I would say at least 10.
10. I'd say 10 is good. I'd say 10 is a fine, fine number. So we'll let you hear from Joel Embiid as the show goes on today. We'll have some fun with that. He is feeling better. He did look good last night. And guess what? After the comments that he made to Keith Pompey in the Inquirer of Philly.com, he loves everybody. Go figure. Everything's fine now.
Had a conversation with Coach.
Everything's good to go. We're good. They beat the Pistons last night in a game with no Blake Griffin, in a game that featured Jimmy Butler for all of the, 30 seconds? Had a growing pull, so we'll get into that. But what we're going to focus on today, and Sam, you know what? We do this for the Twitter poll, and I think people will understand the question. And this is how I want to set it up. Do you believe that Doug Peterson will deliver on his new norm statement? Now, they won, right? And so he's a Super Bowl winning coach. We know that. But when he said that, Trey, he was talking about really setting a trend. Is that clear enough for people if we ask the question that way?
Yeah.
So he promised on the Art Museum steps, this is the new norm. Get used to this. Get used to the parades. I took it as really get used to what we're going to build here, which is a dynasty. I mean, if you're talking about a new norm, saying that parades and all that stuff is going to be the new norm in this city, and you're talking about building something that is going to be like the Patriots, for it to be a norm, it's not just about contending, because he contended. He was here at the start of the new era when everybody started to contend. After he left, I think he went to Cleveland in 2000, Donovan McNabb started to have this team win, started to gain some momentum. Obviously, Trey, you were there.
I sure was.
So it was the whole momentum thing. Do you have confidence that Doug Peterson is the guy to deliver on his promise of a new norm? Do you think he's the guy, Trey?
Yes.
You have confidence he can
do it? Yes, I do. I believe in my man, Doug. You're damn right I do.
This is not a false bravado, is it?
No.
Good for you.
He's my brother. I played with him.
You did.
You're damn right. I believe that Doug can deliver it.
All right.
He needs everybody to get their ass in line.
All right.
Can't do it alone.
All right. So here's why I believe that he can do it. I believe he can do it because I think that Doug actually does listen to other people. He just has to have the right people around him.
Yes.
And right now, he does not. I think it is an attribute of a good leader to be able to listen to the people around you. Unless you're Bill Belichick, where I think it's more of like, hey, everyone else go to hell. It's my idea. We're doing it this way. I mean, that's how the vibe I get from him.
I'm pretty sure Bill Belichick has his people that he listens to.
I think Mike talks to,
and they all sit around and congregate. And
I think Mike Lombardi was one of those guys. Yeah. And he got rid of him, too.
Yeah. But, you know, he probably listens a little bit. You know, he lends an ear every now and then. Then he's like, shut up. All right, this is what we're going to do. But, I mean, you know what? I think Doug can definitely do it. But, you know, you need to have everybody on board for it to happen. I mean, everybody has to pull their own weight on this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, I think you do know. Yeah. I think you absolutely know. Bob, do you think he's a guy? Do you think Doug Peterson is the guy that will deliver on the new norm?
I do not.
Oh, no.
No, why not?
I do not.
Why not, Bob?
I don't know. Like, last year, everything fell into line. And I'm not, you know, cutting it down or anything or diminishing what the accomplishments were. It was one of the greatest times in sports history in Philadelphia, obviously. Does Doug need all those pieces around? Certainly seems so. I think coaching this year is the biggest problem. And you know, we talked about it yesterday with the offense, which is what Doug's, you know, child is. That is there much of a difference in the talent that you had last year when you were winning 9 in a row and you were scoring 30 points a game? Like, why is it so drastically changed? Well, to me, maybe it is the two guys that you lost. And maybe Doug does need those surrounding people. Is he great at getting the players to rally around him? Seemed like it last last year, us against them, all that mentality. But he tried to do that again this year, and that didn't really work either. So I don't have ultimate confidence that the new norm is parades on Broad Street.
Now, here's the thing. If Doug Peterson, and I think Doug Peterson is going to be the coach here for a long time. Like foreseeable future. Like 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Like, I think he could be here for a long time.
Absolutely.
Right? You still have to get the people around him. So we're not saying that, he should be fired and he's done. We're talking about a guy that's going to deliver on a dynasty, essentially. For us to get used to the team addressing us all, and Jason Kelce dressed as a mummer and what have you on the Art Museum steps, is he the guy that you feel will actually be able to deliver on that promise of the new norm? Now, when you comb through all the offensive things for the Eagles, you really want to know what's different this season, right? And a lot of focus falls on the quarterback. When you're not looking at coaching, you're looking at the quarterback. You're looking at Carson Wentz and what he brings to the table. Do you know that Carson Wentz actually has a higher quarterback rating this year than he has last year? Do you realize that? It's like 2 points higher than what it was last year.
It doesn't feel like it.
Do you know that if you look at his QBR, that's where it actually is a big difference. QBR is a little bit more specific for actually rating what the quarterback did in a game. It's the quarterback rating. It's not the passer rating. His passer rating is 102 this year. Last season, it was 101. All right? His QBR this season is 65, 12th in the NFL. Last season, 78, number one in the NFL. Now you look at yards per attempt, you would think it would be a lot shorter this year. Yards per attempt, not yards per completion. Yards per attempt, he's at 7 yards per attempt, pretty much what he was last season. It's a couple of tenths of a point off, but still around seven. Here's the biggest difference, and here's why it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel the same because the Eagles are scoring a touchdown less than what they were last year. So overall, when you look at offense and you look at the numbers that they're adding up, they're not adding up the way they were last year. Last year, I think you had a couple of special teams touchdowns, maybe a pick six. You had some things go into that. But right now, when you watch this team score, they're not scoring like they were last year, Trey.
Yeah, no, they're not.
And that's the biggest worry right there. Mm-hmm. Because if you just add, and I know it doesn't work like this, you can't just throw 7 points in every game, but if you did, you're looking at an 11-win team right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how close their games have been this season. If you have the similar offense that you had last year, you maybe have one tie. I think he would tie the Cowboys, obviously, because they lost that game 27-20 on Sunday night. So you look at it like that, and you go, you had that touchdown, you get a little bit more momentum with your quarterback, and all of a sudden, things are looking on the up and up. But right now, between play calling, between Carson Wentz, between the defense struggling the way they have with all their injuries, and schematically, because even before the injuries, we were screaming about that picket fence defense on third and long situations with Jim Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
So there was all sorts of issues throughout the entire season. But the other thing comes to this, and it goes back to Carson Wentz. When you look at Carson Wentz, I feel like this year, a lot of people are still talking about the injury. I believe and have believed all season long that Carson Wentz could have started week one health-wise and been fine. Mentally, though, getting over whatever mental hurdle he might have, and that was a phrase that came up a number of times yesterday in Doug Peterson's press conference. It came on with our show on PST with Amy and I. Jason Avant brought it up. You hear from Jason as the show goes on today. When you look at the way, or when you listen to the way people talk about Carson Wentz this year, I get a Chase Utley type feeling. I get a feeling that whenever he struggles this year, people give a Chase Utley type of treatment to him, which is, no, he's fine, he's just not 100% healthy. That was the thing that came up a lot with Chase. No, Chase is fine, he just needs to get healthy. With Carson, I don't believe that he's physically hurt. I still think that there is a mental aspect to the injury that he's still trying to get over, whether or not he trusts his knee, whether or not he trusts his mobility, whether or not he trusts being able to plant on that leg and fire off. I don't see, I see a weaker arm than I saw last year. If you want to attribute that to the injury, fine. I think he's 100% healthy. I just think that when it comes to the mental aspect of the injury, he is still struggling there. Is that a reason maybe, Trey, that timing's been off that you've talked about?
No, I think, maybe some of the timing has been off. He didn't have the off season that he usually likes to have with his receivers. But I'm just going back and I'm looking at just a couple little stats, you know, from last year. Last year, he was only sacked 28 times. This year, he's been sacked over 30-something times. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right there, I think that the offensive line play has a lot to do with it. I mean, when you have a quarterback that's coming back off of an injury and gets abused in his first game back against the Colts, I mean, he was sacked, what, 5 times, hit about 11 or 12 times in that game. That kind of sets the tone for where you how you feel in the pocket. You start to feel a little not at ease. And then I also added to that, the timing is off with the receivers. And then now you find, like, all right, you know what, let me find my safety blanket. Where is Zach Ertz? Where is Zach Ertz? And then if Zach Ertz isn't covered, if Zach Ertz is covered, oh my God, who else am I going to throw to? So, you know, all of that has something to play in it. I think one of the things that has hurt Carson Wentz has been how the offensive line has handled protecting him.
All right, so you think it's a matter of protection?
I think so. A lot of it has to.
Protection's key. I think a lot of it, what's going to happen, I think, 3-4 years down the road, we're just going to look back at this season and say, yeah, that 1 year after the injury, you kind of have to check that off. I think he'll return to his form. I really don't think that there's a huge, huge problem there. But as we were talking about in the 5 a.m. hour, some of the All-22 film comes out, and there were some things that are really concerning with guys being open and him just focusing on Zach Ertz. Mm-hmm. Trey perfectly has been talking about it over the last 4 or 5 weeks. He's not anticipating throws, and we're seeing tape today that shows exactly that. I think this is just a year. No one knows how Carson Wentz feels except for Carson Wentz. I think it's a year that he just doesn't feel right. And I'm not saying it's the knee. I'm not saying anything. Maybe it was the preparation for the year. We all know what he's like as far as preparing goes. I don't think the preparation that he could do during his rehab made him feel right this year. Right. I think it's an off year.
All right, we're going to hear from Doug Peterson and how he broke it down. We're also going to hear from Jason Avant because he does believe there's still a very big mental aspect to this injury and Carson Wentz trying to get over that. And I got some disappointing news, folks. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say it. You shouldn't do this. I should just tease this and tell you 2 hours from now, but I'm not going to do it because I love you, the fan of Philadelphia. I think we're going to be disappointed with the winter meetings.
You and Andrew.
I think we're going to be disappointed with the winter meetings. I'm not saying they're not getting Harper. I'm not saying they're not getting Manny Machado. But the time the winter meetings commence, I don't think either one will be a member of the Phillies. Mm. Maybe they'll draw it out, drag it out a wee bit. You might get a name like Jay Happ or something like that. You might get a guy in the rotation like that. 3-year deal seems to be thrown willy-nilly about when it comes to Jay Happ. He's actually older than Cole Hamels, which is...
Shocked when I saw he was 36 already.
That's something I enjoy bringing up because it does blow everybody else's mind. Yeah, remember, when he actually came around with the Phillies, he was like 27 years old when they were in 2009. He was actually their best regular season pitcher, and no big deal, he didn't pitch in the playoffs, but whatever. We'll start in the playoffs, I should say, but I'm not holding a grudge. Sam, how did we decide our Twitter poll question brought to you by Window Nation?
So I wrote exactly what you told me
to. That's always a bad idea, but go ahead.
I asked, do you believe that Doug Peterson will deliver on his new norm promise? So far, we have just under 200 votes. 30% say yes, 70% say no.
Oh my goodness, the negativity.
Lack of faith.
I'm actually with him. But anyway, the negativity. The negativity is what really upsets me. That's what hurts the most. Actually, no, the losing. That's what hurts the most. 6 a.m. hour, of course, brought to you by Bay Management Group, your premier property management company specializing in multifamily and single-family rental properties. Visit baymgmtgroup.com. We'll hear from Doug Peterson coming up on Carson Wentz and what Jason Avant had to say about the quarterback trying to get over the injury. Time at the Fanatic is 6:13. On the line with us right now from Philly.com, the star of the press conference yesterday, Mr. Mike Sielski. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Mark. How are you?
Doing great, man. I had to say it. A caller called up maybe 8 minutes ago and said, you know, Doug wrote a book called Fearless. How did he not go for it on the two-point conversion? And I said, you're on the same wavelength as Mike Sielski, proud LaSalle graduate, a great mind about him, fine reporter. What came to you in that press conference that said, Doug, yo, fearless, where's it at?
Well, I had that in my mind watching the game Sunday, and then it just seemed a natural question to ask come Monday at the press conference. I mean, look, you know, you have a chance to take the lead in that moment, and you won a Super Bowl the previous season in large part because you played to win every single game. You looked at the analytics and you didn't listen to the old heads in the press box who said you always punt on 4th and 3 from your own 47. And, you know, I made reference to this in my column. You know, it was brought up during the press conference, and I certainly wasn't the first one to do it, that Doug had gone for the 2-point conversion in a similar situation last season in Carolina. that, you know, the Panthers had committed a penalty.
Yep.
And the Eagles could have moved the kickoff up 15 yards and decided against that and went for two and got it. And Doug said, well, the situations were different. Well, I mean, if you're fearless, if you're playing not to lose, back in Carolina, you were up six in the third quarter. It's a little bit easier to be fearless in that situation than it is when your season is on the line and you have a chance to take a lead with 99 seconds left against a team that is renowned for not playing well in crucial moments of games. And it just seemed to me that in the kind of moment that is supposed to define the kind of coach that Doug Peterson is, he had a chance to walk on the wire, and he declined not to do it, and that's not who he's supposed to be.
I'm a little disappointed in Doug for not at least thanking you for the plug, and then for, and then also for maybe not saying what writers have always told me before I knew how it worked, which was that writers don't write the headline, the editor does.
Yeah,
so maybe they don't write the title to the story. But no, in all seriousness.
Here's the thing, though, Doug.
Yeah.
Doug is cashing all the checks from the book club.
You're damn right he is.
Oh, yeah. You know all about that, Mike.
Yeah, tell me about it.
All right.
But, Mike, in all seriousness, it does seem like it has been a little bit of a different Doug Peterson. I know he didn't have the personnel that he trusted like he could last year with veterans like LeGarrette Blount or even Jay Ajayi, but do you notice this year a more timid Doug Peterson?
I kind of do. I mean, you know, numbers-wise, they're still fourth in the league in terms of the number of attempts of going forward on fourth down, but that can be a fickle thing. I mean, how often are you in those situations? You know, we saw it a little bit earlier in the season. If you remember week one, you know, they ran, you know, the Philly play with Nick Foles and Nelson Aguilar, and it kind of snapped them out of the doldrums in that game against the Falcons, and they went on to win that game. It just seems to me that in that situation on Sunday, there shouldn't even have been a question. You know, your defense is going to end up giving up 576 yards of total offense. The Cowboys had just scored on a 75-yard touchdown pass on their previous possession. If you have a chance to change the dynamics of the game, to take a lead for the first time, and you only need 1 yard to do it, and all of a sudden you're shifting all the pressure onto your opponent. If you get that, if you get in the end zone there, now you've got the lead, and the Cowboys have to score. And, you know, one of the explanations that Doug offered yesterday was that, well, if by tying the game, the Cowboys are much less likely to go for it on fourth down than they would be if they were down by one, which to me is just a complete slap in the face, you know, to your defense.
Sure.
Basically saying, look, guys, I know you're not playing well, but I really don't believe in you at all. And, you know, that's not how he coached last season. He asked a lot of his team, and the team delivered. This is who he's supposed to be, and I think that disconnect doesn't help him. I don't think it lends itself, you know, that inconsistency as a coach is not a good thing.
Huh. When you heard him talk about Sidney Jones, what did you read between the lines through his comments?
You know, it's funny. A few of us talked about this after the press conference, Trey. I think the general consensus, particularly among the writers who were there and who cover the team even more than I do, was that Doug would have preferred Sidney not try to play on the hamstring. You know, get out of there. You're not healthy. We know you want to play, but it's not helping the team to have you out there. You know, now that's a really tough situation because the guys you have behind Sidney Jones who are healthy aren't all that good either. I mean, they barely qualify to be on an NFL roster. So that's a hard situation. But that was generally, you know, talking to people like Les Bowen and Jeff McClain and Zach Berman, you know, my colleagues who cover the team on a day-to-day basis, that seemed to be the consensus, that it was more like, look, we love you, Sidney, but you should stay on the sideline, and Jones didn't want to.
Mike,
right.
it appears to me Carson at the line of scrimmage isn't the same quarterback that he was the last couple of years, and that's where he was commanding everyone, you know, calling blocking schemes, directing traffic before, you know, the kills, obviously, before the ball was snapped. This year doesn't seem to be that way at all. It's go there, call out your count, get the ball, and go. A, do you see that? And B, why is that?
That's a really good question, Bobby. I mean, at some level, I want to say, oh, let's look at the numbers to see how often he's audible, that sort of thing. But I do get the general sense that you're right. And this is my theory. I've actually written this earlier in the year, that when Carson got hurt last season, they won the Super Bowl in large part because they completely revamped the offense mm-hmm. with Nick Foles. You know, you couldn't ask Nick Foles to do all the things that Carson Wentz had been doing throughout the 2017 season. They're different players. with different strengths. And it was clear that the offense was a little more orchestrated for Nick Foles than it had been for Wentz. And I wonder how much of that is just left over. Like, once Wentz came back, and maybe in part they had to do this because he was coming off the knee injury and they anticipated him not being the same quarterback that he had been when healthy. It just seems to me that everything is more orchestrated for him. And I wonder if that's necessarily his strength. You know, you see the opposite to a certain degree in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. It's almost as if every play with Rodgers is backyard football.
Right.
And there's got to be a happy medium there where you're allowing Wentz to use his strengths. And part of that is his improvisational skills and his athleticism. It seems to me they call an awful lot of screens on third and four or fourth and three when, you know, to guys like Josh Adams or Corey Clement or Darren Sproles, who, while they're pretty good running backs, are not the franchise quarterback. And it seems to me in those kind of situations, you ought to be relying more on the guy who is supposed to be the be-all and end-all of your franchise.
Speaking with Mike Sielski of Philly.com.
What happened to Josh Adams during the game? It seemed like he just kind of disappeared at some point.
I think he flew back to Central Bucks County. that can be the only explanation for why they went away from him, Trey. I mean, he ripped off that 24-yard run, and then it was, you know, he was like Paulie in The Godfather. Oh, we'll see him no more. You know, I don't get it.
No, that's we all agree. We didn't get it either, especially because you had the 24-yard run, like you said, and then all of a sudden he just vanished. But Mike, the other thing of this is how healthy is Carson Wentz? I believe he's 100% healthy, but in terms of getting mentally over the injury, trusting the knee, Doug Peterson, when he was asked about it yesterday, went on for about 30 to 40 seconds about all these different excuses to make for Carson. And then I believe it was Jeff McClain who said, well, is he 100% over it? Is he 100%? Does he have any mental blocks? And he said, yeah, he's 100% over it. So what do you make of this whole, is Carson healthy or 100% over the injury?
You know, he's probably got a little bit more to go in terms of just readjusting to the flow of the sport. You know, I go back to 2006. I don't know if Trey remembers this. Donovan McNabb, you know, suffered a very similar knee injury midway through that season. The Eagles went on and went to the playoffs with Jeff Garcia. And Donovan came back the following year. And it really was not until, gosh, probably week 13 or 14 that he was really, really on point. He had a terrific game here and there, but for the most part, everything just kind of looked off. And then finally, by the end of the year, he looked terrific. And I wonder if some of that is happening with Carson. You know, that, you know, there are mental obstacles that any elite athlete is going to have to overcome when he suffers an injury like that. And I wonder if there's some of that that Carson is dealing with. And as I said earlier, I wonder if it plays into how they've been calling plays and running the offense. If they just don't want to put quite as much on his plate because he's coming off of that injury and isn't quite what he was before he got hurt.
Mike, there's still a 5% chance that they can make the playoffs.
I saw 16 to 18%. I think it was 18% because the Vikings lost.
Oh, okay. The 5% was before the Vikings lost last night.
Yeah.
See that? And my, hey, to man, that, Mike Sielski says?
You got to hang on to something. I say no. I say
all right.
Still have a chance.
So much for hanging on to something. Mike, while we have you, because as always, you're a man for all seasons. When you look at Joel Embiid making the statement to Keith Pompey about how he is not happy with his role, he is frustrated, and then coming out last night saying, oh, no, I love everybody. Where do you think Joel Embiid is right now with his mindset? Is he happy where he's at? Does he need to see changes? What are we to take from it?
I think you take from it that he's not happy with how he has played since Jimmy Butler has come on board. I don't think it's a matter of he's unhappy they made the trade. I don't think it's a matter of him being, you know, kicked off at Brett Brown or anything like that. I just think it's a matter of, hey, you went out and acquired a third superstar. And as it turns out, he's at least, you know, Butler is at least the second best player on the team, you know, ahead of Ben Simmons, I would say. And so it's going to take a little time to get them all on the same page. And this is on Brett to figure this out, to get Joel back to the efficiency that he had been at and the productivity that he had been at before Butler got here. I mean, Butler's been terrific, and Joel's numbers have dropped. And I think this is simply the kind of thing that it's going to take time, presumably, for them to figure out, okay, how do we run an offense and run an overall scheme that maximizes what Jimmy Butler does and maximizes what Joel Embiid can do.
Mike, last thing for you, because Bob and I were kicking this around. Do you remember the name of the fictitious book Doug Collins said that he would call his own biography if he wrote his own book?
You know what? To be honest, Mark, I wasn't working in the city at the time.
Oh, you were at the Wall Street Journal. I'm sorry.
And to be honest, I have no interest in what Doug Collins would write his book. That guy, I've never met him. He comes off as a very nice guy. But I remember watching that press conference after that game. I think it was against the Orlando Magic, you know, where he lauded how wonderful he was.
Yes.
And all of that. I would not be interested in purchasing or reading a Doug Collins autobiography.
Well, this might make you eye roll a little bit more. It was always a winner, never a champion.
Yeah, I'm not buying that book.
Mike, you're the man. Thanks so much for coming on. Mike Sielski, Philly.com. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
And speaking of the holidays, we have the Fanatic Holiday Wheel making a triumphant return here to 97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic Holiday Wheel. The Fanatic Holiday Wheel. That's right. It returns next week. This year, we'll be spinning the Holiday Wheel three times a day with the morning show at 9 a.m., the midday show at 1 p.m., and the Mike Bisnelli show at 5 p.m. You could have a chance to win amazing prizes from Steven Singer Jewelers, French Creek Outfitters, Flacco's and Conshohocken, Landis Block and Concrete, Imagine Lifestyles Luxury Car Rentals, Ron Jaworski Golf, the Sixers, the Flyers, and so much more. Go to the contest page on 975thefanatic.com to register. That is 975thefanatic.com to register now for your chance to become a Holiday Wheel contestant. That sounds nice.
So cheery.
That's a yes.
Okay.
What? What's the problem?
No, nothing. Nothing. I just want to correct something.
Well, what happened?
Well, just because I want. Because when we tweeted out the Michael Kiss video, and I was talking about how with the tackle set and everything, when they ran the TE.
Yes.
And people are questioning, well, you know, JP and everything. And understand this. It's not just JP's issue that I'm talking about when I'm talking about the set line on this. Mm. This is coaching as well. You know, I'm off of the players doing their thing because the players are going to do what the coaches allow them to get away with. So what my thing is right now on this, the way the set line that JP took, I have no problem with the set line that he took if the center was sliding left. Okay. Now, if the center is sliding right, that means that you don't have inside help. And then if you know that you don't have inside help, you need to, as a tackle, set vertical to make it a lot easier to switch off if there is a TE. Because he set at a 45, that created space between he and the guard, which allowed the tackle to go ricochet off of his inside hip. Now, it's not necessarily JP's fault. I think that sometimes Coach Stoutland needs to take the bull by the horn and correct some of this in practice. So you say, all right, hey, man, because it's not just an injury that's keeping JP from setting vertical. There are times in the game where he takes a beautiful vertical set and does it exactly the way he should do it. But now, that means that Coach Stoutland, when he's doing film study and doing all of this and you're going through this, this is something that you have to tell JP, hey, look, man, I need you to set vertical on this, because if not, he's going to go out there and do his thing. He's looking at the end and setting the way the end is presenting himself. So, you know, this is not just on JP. It's the coaching, and it's also on the left guard as well.
Gotcha. Only thing I'll correct you on is it's no longer take the bull by the horns.
Yeah, my bad.
It's take the flower by the thorns.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, right. Come on. I'm sorry.
Come on.
Sorry.
We're all very sensitive right now.
I know.
Z in Philly, you're on 975 The Fanatic. What's up, Z?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, man.
Yo, Trey?
Yes.
And that was beautiful. I felt like I was back in trigonometry class. Well, look, I'm sure whatever you described was great. I personally need to see it on paper for me to see exactly what you're talking about, because I'm not a football player, but I love the Eagles, which promoted me to make a call. There's too much talk about the two-point conversion. The reason is because I think if you don't make it, Coach is going to be crucified in the city. Because, you know, they if they tie it, which they did, and they get the two-point conversion, then they win the game, and that's great. But if they don't, they're done, because they don't have enough time yet.
Right, right. And Z, thanks for the call, man. I got to move along. But somebody asked me about that on Twitter, about how I'd be ripping them if it was the other way. And, yeah, you can always do that in talk radio. But in that moment, being real with you, I don't feel like if he would have went for it and didn't get it, people could have jumped ship. Because I would have said they were hypocrites. I absolutely would have said it. You can't love the guy last year for being guts all the time and then hate on the guy when he tries to do it again in what amounted to this season's Super Bowl.
Man,
I'm being real.
I'm just saying, if he would have gone for it and not made it,
I'm being real.
People would have lit him up.
They would have absolutely.
They
but I would have
lit him up.
I would have had Doug's back.
He doesn't care about you.
Right. That is absolutely correct. looks to me like that's the guy that asked me about the dog mask. If anything, Will Scranton, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Will?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Love the show.
Thanks, man.
I listened to The Fanatic all day yesterday, maybe because I'm a glutton for punishment. but I just wanted to talk about the fact that this team just can't get out of its own way. Every time they get a positive play, it's negated by a penalty, or they have a negative play at the very next play. Like on the Spurs, take the ball down to the five, Ertz blocks in the back. They finally get a key stop late in the game, and Corey Graham tackles the guy going across the middle of the field. And it just seems like every time they go forward, they go one step back.
That's a 500 team for you.
Yeah, really. Well, and that's exactly how they've looked, and thanks for the call. That's, unfortunately, why they are exactly, as Bob just pointed out, exactly where they are at. Anthony Lafayette Hill, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Anthony?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
Hey, first of all, give me Harper. I believe the intangible he brings it will outdo the numbers that Machado will give you this year, which I think Machado's numbers will be better. But I digress and move on to the X factor here, and the reason why Doug wouldn't have gotten roasted is because his defense was already on the field for 90 plays. So if he would have went into that press conference and said, my field goal, my the extra point was missed already once, my defense is exhausted.
He had outs.
To win the game. And
brilliant. That's a brilliant point. And by the way, I agree with you on Harper. And yes, that's a great point. That's an absolute great point.
And I just don't think he would have got roasted. I think people would have said, you know what, it was a do-or-die situation. The season's on the line, and we can't put that defense out there again to get roasted in overtime.
So, Anthony, you are speaking brilliance. Thank you very much for the call. B's been holding as well in Jersey. See that?
They
agree with me, they're very smart people. B, what do you got, buddy?
Hey, quick question. So with Don Filippo about to be fired, I think he is going to get fired. I don't think they're bringing him back.
Dave Filippo or John DeFilippo?
John DeFilippo.
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Do you see him coming back to the Eagles for the OC job?
I hope so.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if he got fired after one year.
I don't think that's going to happen, B. Thanks for the call, man. But I know that's what a lot of people want to see happen, him come back to Philadelphia. But we do have our takeaways of the day today, brought to you by Swartz Carlton. But first, we have our Twitter poll nation, window nation update. What's the final tabulation, Sam Wilson?
Today we asked, do you believe that Doug Peterson will deliver on his new norm promise? We had just under 2,900 votes today. 69% say no.
How is
Jamie?
How is he not here today?
I know.
Oh, this is a shame. This is a shame. We'll have to save these results. Screen grab that for us, please, Sam.
Yes.
So we have that for Jamie tomorrow. We'll do a recap of yesterday as well. awesome. What's your takeaway of the day brought to you by Swartz Carlton? Get the money you deserve. Call 1-800-JUSTICE.
My takeaway of the day is February 1st, 2019. We have our Super Bowl tournament.
Yes, we do.
You like how he's saying that? Because I'm so excited.
That was very good. It was on
Thank
key.
You.
It was perfect pitch. Mm-hmm. Everything about that was lovely.
I kind of got it.
It was lovely. Bob Cooney.
Life is short and opportunities in it, both personally and professionally, must be seized when presented. Let that be a lesson to you, James Lynch Jr. A diarrhea gift from Joel Embiid is a rarity, and it's a crime your illness prevented you from collecting it.
Aha, headache and diarrhea.
Trey Thomas, take away the day.
I have nothing.
You have nothing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Not even diarrhea or a migraine?
No diarrhea.
My takeaway of the day is from Oleg Ulick, who, by the way, writes for, I believe, Sports Illustrated Australia or something like that. Fox Sports Australia. Jamie Lynch tweeted this out. It was a picture with him and Ben Simmons in which Oleg here is wearing a T-shirt that says, Rookie? Question mark? So he says, safe to say Ben wasn't happy about the shirt. To which Ben Simmons replies, it's fine, man. I know it was on sale. Have a great day, everybody. Stay tuned for Gargano Martinez Middays on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.